This is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Mid-March is when many in southern New England would usually get their gardens started. With the weather we've been having, that may seem a distant dream right now. But hey, on the bright side, that means more time for planning. And a new book has plenty of ideas about how and why to incorporate native plants into our landscapes. Dan Jaffe is propagator and stockbed grower at the New England Wildflower Society's Garden in the Woods and co-author of Native Plants for New England Gardens, out this month. Dan, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Why preferentially try to use native plants in our yards and gardens as opposed to whatever else we might find at the garden store?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for it. It kind of depends on what you're going for. And one of the things I like to say is that, you know, the great thing about natives is you don't really have to give up anything. You get all these reasons at once. I'd say my first attraction to natives came before my interest in kind of ecology. And I was really attracted to them because when you pick the right plant for the right place, they work amazingly well. You know, they've evolved in this area, which means they're used to, you know, warm weather in the middle of winter and cold weather when we think it's supposed to be spring, or, you know, strange maize where we got 27 days of rain, or any of that weird stuff that kind of New England has a way of throwing at us tends to be something that they've dealt with before. And so they tend to be a lot lower maintenance, you know, when you're choosing the right ones. I think the second piece of it, though, is that we've gotten to the point where, for us, gardens need to be more than just pretty. We're looking to actually kind of do good in the world. We want to know that when we're planting plants, we're supporting life in the ecosystem. And that's where the native plants really do better than anything else out there. When you start comparing, you know, the value ecologically of a native plant to a non-native plant, it's just there's no argument to be had. The natives are just simply better in that case.
Let's take a step back and actually define what it means to be a native plant versus a non-native plant, and then on the far end of the spectrum, an invasive plant.
Oh, geez. How long's your show? This could take hours.
The short version, yeah.
Yeah, even that's tough. But we've been struggling with that for a long time. At first, you know, it seems like a very simple concept, and then when you start getting into the nitty gritty, all of a sudden things get complicated. But the general kind of quick version is a native plant is a plant that is naturally occurring within a given ecoregion, or within a given geographic zone, I think would probably be the better place to start. That second part is really important. We hear a lot about just this is a native plant, and you really do need a qualifier when you're talking about native. I mean, it's a kind of ridiculous example, but one could say that purple loosestrife is native because without a qualifier, we might be talking about the planet Earth or China or something to that extent. So for us, we tend to kind of... We need some way of describing the region, and we don't tend to think that state lines make a lot of sense. That's kind of the traditional way of doing things. When it comes down to it, though, plants really don't care about political lines. It's not like you've got the Democratic plants down in Massachusetts and the Republican ones up in Maine. So we use this idea of ecoregions. The ecoregions are geographic zones that are based on things like rainfall patterns, hardiness, soil geology, the sort of things plants actually care about. So when you overlay that with us as a regional organization being the New England Wildflower Society, we've chosen to define native based on the five ecoregions of New England. It includes all of the states of New England, as well as some areas kind of in a little bit of New York, a touch of Pennsylvania, the northern half of Jersey, and actually some spaces north of America and Canada that are all kind of encompassed in these ecoregions. The next piece is putting a time on things, which is also difficult. We tend to say European settlement, just because that simplifies things as far as the difference between, say, a native, First Nations moving a plant around versus a plant coming across an ocean on the Mayflower. Two very different situations. But at the same time, we like to point out that evolution has not just ended, you know, the day that Columbus hit the ground. So there's a little bit of wiggle room amongst the definition of native. It's something that needs to evolve as our planet changes. But to simplify things, plants that are present in the ecoregions pre-European settlement, and we'll just kind of go with that.
Well, let's actually go back and hit on some of that complexity, because you mentioned the fact that our planet is always changing, but it's changing particularly rapidly right now as a result of human-caused climate change. is there an argument for, instead of choosing plants that have evolved native to New England and the climate that we've had here for the past 2,000 years, to maybe start choosing plants that evolved with the climate of the Mid-Atlantic for the past 2,000 years, since that's what we're going to be looking at here, you know, in the next few decades?
There's arguments on both sides, you know, kind of on one end of the spectrum that I think we'd call the you know, traditional conservatism sort of side of things. And I don't mean that politically. I mean like conserving rare plants sort of conservatism. A lot of times there's a worry of introducing the wrong plants and it becoming a problem. And that gets as specific as, you know, obviously invasive species are the you know, the obvious example. But there's even some folks saying we got to really make sure we're introducing the local genotype of whatever native plant we're talking about. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got, in many cases, also conservationists, but other folks as well, saying we really should be focusing on trying to bring as genetically diverse of a kind of landscape together as possible, because a more diverse landscape is going to be more resilient to climate change. I think I tend to fall a little bit more on that side of things than the first side of things, but the problem is that these are questions that in many cases we're just starting to ask now. And so when you know, normally when we've got a complicated question in our world, we move towards the research and try and see what's going on, and we're just starting this research now. So, you know, in another 200 years when climate change is much worse, we might have a good answer. And you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's just not fast enough. The kind of nice thing about a lot of these native plants, though, is that many of them have a much wider range than you might think. Something like, you know, Acer rubrum, our native red maple, the ones that turn vibrant red in the fall, not that ugly purple leaf thing that you see all over the place. That plant grows from Maine and parts north of Maine down into, I think it gets as far south as Florida. So in this case, you know, we can be picking species that kind of takes the worry out of the, you know, the game. We can choose plants that thrive south of us but also thrive north of us, plant a nice, you know, diverse kind of population of them, and we're going to be looking at really resilient kind of spaces. I think the real goal for my kind of world is to try and really pick plants that we know are very resilient. If you had one of our conservation staff in here, they might be talking about, you know, whether or not we should be looking at some of these southern species that are growing on the tops of mountains that are going to really struggle in a changing climate. And that's a whole different bag of worms.
I'm talking with Dan Jaffe of the New England Wildflower Society and co-author of Native Plants for New England Gardens. We're not going to go through the whole book and every plant in there, obviously, but I think a lot of us are potentially looking at replacing some trees this spring after the weather that we've had in the past couple of weeks. And looking through the book, I noticed that, in fact, pitch pine, which we have plenty of here on Cape Cod, and plenty of them have come down in the past couple of weeks, that's not even in the book. So could you give us some recommendations maybe on where we might look for trees that would be well-suited to Cape Cod and southern New England?
One of the things I'll kind of mention quickly about why pitch pine isn't in that book is we got nothing against pitch pine. It's a fabulous plant. We got a small book and we had a small amount of space, so we kind of went with the cream of the crop plants. And when people are looking to plant natives, in many cases, it's a lot easier to put a new perennial into your garden than it is to put a new tree into your garden or the greater landscape. So we really leaned in the herbaceous section kind of as far as the plants in that book. I absolutely love pitch pines. I've always described them as looking like giant bonsai trees, and I've always had a soft spot for bonsais, especially, you know, in your area where they're all kind of whipped by the winds off the ocean and everything. We've got a couple of our favorite native trees in this book, and we are actually in the process of building a native plant database, which will have every plant in the book as well as every one we couldn't get into the book, and that should be available. We're hoping to have it up and running by kind of early spring. I think May is our current plan, but keep an eye on our website for that. As far as just some good kind of trees to look out for, a lot of it's going to start with, we always say kind of right plant, right place. Instead of necessarily just saying, hey, I really, really like tulip tree, I would kind of start with, what are your conditions? Do you have a sunny spot? Do you have a sandy spot? Do you have a wet spot? You know, so forth. And then from there, generate your plant list, and you'll find yourself being much more successful in the landscape in that manner. But just to kind of throw a couple names out there, because I hate to just kind of give you a non-answer, a couple trees that I absolutely love that I don't see a lot of on the landscape. One of them is sourwood, Oxydendrum arboreum. It's one of these plants that has a really glossy leaf. It almost looks like it should be an evergreen, even though it's not. I've always just been a sucker for shiny things, and this is most certainly one of them. It's also got a flower that blooms in the kind of, you know, mid to later summer coming into fall. And then as the flower is starting to pass and the fruit is starting to form, the kind of fall color kicks in and you get this deep, rich red color that just, it shines on the landscape. It's an absolutely beautiful plant. There's other ones that jump out to me if you need a fast-growing tree. I tend to skip the silver maples, not that there's anything wrong with them, but I prefer tulip tree if I want something a little faster growing. Really unique leaves, beautiful flowers, quick growing and gets big, so cite it accordingly. And there's kind of a hundred others that jump out to mind. You kind of can't do New England without red maples, sugar maples. I think yellow birch needs to be used a lot more often. People know birches, but they don't know yellow birch. It's got it's very different from the paper birches. It's slower growing. I wouldn't call it slow, but for a birch, it's slower growing. Really nice fall color. And if you kind of cut the stem, it smells absolutely wonderful. Smells just like birch beer and actually makes a really wonderful tea.
As you're going through a lot of these species that we don't necessarily see as much of in New England, I'm wondering where we would go to find them. I mean, that database that you were mentioning is a great place to get ideas. The book has ideas for what species to look for, but where do we actually go to buy them?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's gotten harder lately because we're really pushing for a much higher level of plant than what you'd find at kind of a traditional, hardware store style nursery. We want plants that are free of systemic pesticides. We want plants that, as often as possible, are grown from seed. We want natural species. You know, we're not against, you know, cultivars in general, but we don't like the idea of everything being a cultivar. We want that to be kind of the specialty plant and the majority of your plants to be what we're calling natural species. Not to be too self-serving, but you can definitely come to us. New England Wildflower Society has a site in Framingham, Massachusetts, another one in Waitley, Massachusetts, our propagation facility, where we sell a lot of these plants. In your neck of the woods, I know that the Cape Cod Museum of Natural History has a plant sale every year where they sell a lot of native plants. Going a little bit south of you guys, there's the Rhodey Native Group, which is out of Rhode Island. They don't actually sell plants, but I know that they've got, you know, they're a really good organization and could likely give you some really good recommendations. Both Cape Cod and Rhode Island have a native plant societies. I'd reach out to both of them, and then I can give you a whole bunch of recommendations for Western Mass and Maine, where I came from, that probably doesn't do your listeners much good.
Dan Jaffe is propagator and stock bed grower at the New England Wildflower Society's Garden in the Woods and co-author of a new book, Native Plants for New England Gardens, that's out this month. Dan, thanks so much for talking with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Coming up, American kids are more anxious and depressed than ever. And the solution, according to a new book, may be more decision-making power. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.